Hello there, boys and girls. Yes, we're back. Took a little hiatus. Lots of strange paperwork, you know, getting a forensic audit from the IRS. So, yeah, it's just lots of other things to do besides talk about fishing at the moment, you know. What do they say? SOA. We're not saving our okay. Took us time. Anyway, lots of cool stuff going on and not going on.
It's been weird.
Yeah, fishing Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me. And we're back for a walk around the harbor. Yes. Yes, it's happening again. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Okay, shut up, everybody. Be quiet. Calm down. Settle down. I know it's Robert. But, you know. Okay, there we go. All right, we're back.
Wow.
I know. Hey. I had to get some enthusiasm going. Get something exciting happening. So, we've checked our phones. We have coffee made.
We're good. Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew.
My last one of the day.
Yeah?
That's my second refill.
Okay. All right. Now that we've got all the pleasantries out of the way, where are we going to start walking around the harbor here?
The easiest one is up on the river because there's nothing to walk around about except for the bird watching.
Actually, there's been some tarpon up there.
A few.
Yeah, it's not.
They've been
quick,
weird.
But it's just, there's been a few up there. But it's pretty much an early morning thing. It's a daylight fish.
Yeah.
If you hit it at daylight, you're going to catch some fish and all good. If not, it gets real iffy after that.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. A few guys have been seeing a few during the daytime, but like you said, real iffy at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and then right there at the I-75 bridge, that's been sporadic good reports there. Some black drum, a few oddball whiting. Very few trout, but they've been bigger trout, like in the high teens to 20 inch range. And up there, you know, even though we haven't had much rain, those are kind of resident fish, so they're just spectacular looking with how golden they get. Kind of neat to see. Been some juvenile oddball sharks up there, little black nose, oddball black tip. A couple baby bulls up there too. So that's been a little bit more consistent. Ladyfish, juvenile tarpon right there around the bridge, first light, and in the evening after the thunderstorms roll through.
Which bridge are we talking about?
75.
Oh, okay.
And then as you work your way down towards the 41 bridge, that whole span in between 75 and 41, keep your eye out because there has been tarpon moving in and out with some Spanish mackerel and a few ladyfish. But it's been strictly incidental catches. You just happen to stumble across them. But that the actual bridge itself, the tarpon are still stacked up there real good at night. You know, they've been going off at random times, but there's a consistent good numbers of them. A lot of snook during the daytime. A few oddball cobia. Most of them are on the smaller side, but been a few legal ones. Whiting. Few black drum, sugar trout, silver trout, kind of a mixed bag, but it's one day's good, the next 2 days are kind of garbage, and then 2 days of good and 1 day of garbage. It's weird.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to matter with the tides. Usually this time of year it's that incoming tide makes it real good, and then the outgoing kind of makes it a little funky.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's no pattern to it. You know, that's what you kind of meant by that good and bad thing going on. It's just some weird.
Yeah, it's not been, nowhere is, okay, this is what I'm going to go and do. It's, this is where I'm going to go and hope to do it, but I might have to do it over there.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the theme for all over the harbor.
Okay.
Over at the, working away from, say, 41 Bridge over towards the Port Charlotte Canals, Bayshore, some smaller sharks, few whiting, oddball cobia of various sizes, and sporadic tarpon too. You know, mainly an early morning bite and late evening bite. Port Charlotte Canals, that's been real wishy-washy. A lot of little jacks coming through the canal, and even some bigger ones, but mostly towards the entrances. Been some trout sporadically. Even some guys still catching them at night around some of the lights. A few snook, oddball little redfish, black drum. Even been some tiny sheephead being caught back in there, just not a lot. I don't know if you've heard anything about the locks at all. I haven't heard anything in the last several days other than a couple guys trolling on their way in and out, getting a couple jacks and small snook.
Okay. And that sounds exciting and interesting and entertaining.
No, not really. The Myakka cutoff and the whole area around the mouth of the Myakka itself. The Myakka cutoff haven't had very many reports up inside. Mainly at the entrance on a few snook, oddball redfish, and a couple trout. But around the Hog Island side, on the Myakka side, there's been a bunch of little sharks cruising around on that grass flat with a few ladyfish and an oddball cobia. And then going from the Myakka all the way up to, say, El Jobin, trout along those grass flats, along Tippy Canoe, a few. They're not numbers, but they're better quality fish. Tarpon, a lot of little sharks right there at the El Jobin itself at night. Snook are still doing fairly well, but the tarpon have been incredible there at night. There's been some good quality fish there. You know, 41, it's been like a 5-pounder and a 100-pounder. Never know what you're gonna get, but at El Jobin lately at night, it's been like 80 to 110. You know, fairly good sized fish.
Well, that's actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Any kind of, anybody talking about what bait they're using?
They're actually catching them on a variety. Some of the guys are throwing bait busters. Some of them are throwing thread fins and ladyfish, and then a couple guys are throwing crabs. So they're kind of eating a mixed gamut, which makes it a little nicer. You know, they're not focused in on one particular thing right now, so it's kind of makes it more productive, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if they're hitting a variety of baits and stuff like that, it's always a little more interesting, because the hard part about it is it's hard to say, go there and do this.
Right.
You know, it's a mixture of being lucky and being good. That's, you know, I hate to say it, but that's kind of where you're at with that El Jobin fishing pier is, you know, you're standing there and the guy next to you catches this great fish, and, you know, and even though you're using the same baits.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's kind of frustrating at times, but, you know.
It is.
Yes, I wish I had a better...
It's that lucky horseshoe on that guy.
Yes.
You know, it's, well, and that's the same reason why a lot of people don't understand why people don't mix charters up. You know, like, well, if you got a buddy, you know, a guy that doesn't want to pay for the whole trip and wants to split it up, because there's always that one lucky person on the boat.
Oh, yeah, I quit that. It took me just a couple of times of doing what they call split trips, you know, where you have two separate groups of people who don't know each other, mm-hmm. because somebody in the boat is lucky. I had two couples on the boat one day, and I had one woman and really nice couple. Both of them were really nice. But this one woman, she had a red shirt on. That's all I remember, dark hair and a red shirt. I don't remember their names. But she, it didn't matter where I tossed her line, she caught a fish. And I come into one little spot, and I anchor up there, and I got four people in the boat. I got lines spread out everywhere, and I got her up in the front, and I throw a bait up there, and she catches beautiful 40-ish snook. And, you know, so we land that and take it off, and everybody's all happy. Well, then I kind of rotated everybody up, put somebody else up in that spot, put her towards the back of the boat, and threw over there. She caught a 30-inch snook, and then so I kind of was moving people around the boat, but every place I put her, well, I put this other woman after this first woman with the red shirt had caught like 8 snook, a redfish, and some other, and nobody else has caught anything yet. So I just took one of her fish, and I trying to get this one of the other people up there to catch a big snook. I took her line, threw it over my head out to the open water, handed her the rod just to get the bait in the water and, you know, be able to do something else, just kind of a pause for a second thing, but she was still in the water. And I take the other woman's rod, I throw it up in the front, right in the same spot where this woman has caught several snook before, and the woman whose rod I literally tossed over my head, just blind casted out to open water, lands a 24-inch trout. And now she's slammed out. She's got multiple snooks. She's got everything. And nobody else has caught anything. And from what I understand, they really haven't spoken to each other much since that day. And it taught me, and I had one time where I had a grandfather and a little kid out. And he wanted the kid to catch a nice redfish, and he never caught a redfish at all. I finally made the grandpa stop. I took his rod away and set it in the holder and said, you're not allowed to fish until he catches a fish. Because after 3 hours plus of catching steady redfish, grandpa, like 30, the kid, zero. He had caught like a catfish and a trout, but couldn't catch a redfish. So I finally put the grandpa's rod up and said, no. We're here to catch him a redfish. You're going to sit there. It took me 45 minutes, but the kid finally caught a nice redfish, I think about 26 inches. But I actually had to
stop fishing.
Yeah, keep grandpa off the rod until the kid caught a fish.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes you really got to work to break that, okay, this guy's on his lucky day.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not usually that until I've had enough vodka to become one with the gods, and then I'm pretty good, you know. But I learned I don't gamble at all. I don't do any of that stuff because sober, I'm no good at it.
Right.
I lose everything. Now, one with the gods, I can do pretty good. But it costs so much to get me that far that it's just not worth it.
Right. You know? No, I definitely get that.
Yeah, somebody's knocking at a door.
Anyway,
so outside of me being one with the gods, but yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And we hear about that all the time from different people. They're out and same basically like on a charter, you're using the exact same rods and reels, same line, same leader, same bait, same hooks, everything, and throwing 3 feet apart.
Exactly. Yeah. I used to do that actually with Blake, you know. Throwing same line, same rod, nothing at all. It was unbelievable how you couldn't get into him. You know, I couldn't anyway with an artificial. He'd be throwing the same thing and just wrecking fish after fish, and not me, nothing.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I have no idea what goes on with that.
Mm-mm.
So, anyway, getting back into the wide world of where were we at the Monica River. So, we're hitting the west wall at this point.
Heading down the west wall. Along the bushes there, basically, from Trout Creek all the way down, there's scattered redfish underneath the bushes, and even a few redfish out on the right at the edges of the bar. Shrimp is still king so far over there. Couple guys are starting to pick up a few here and there on pinfish and cut bait, but the shrimp is by far holding its own pretty well over there. The snook, on the other hand, though, that are all along the bushes and better numbers as you get south, they're hitting the white bait. Definitely preferring that. On the bar itself, there's been a few tarpon, a lot of little oddball sharks, oddball pompano, oddball cobia. I mean, kind of a mixed gamut over there, but most of those guys are just drifting, playing around for whatever's going to come across. As you get down there towards Muddy Bay, Cape Hayes, out there on the Cape Hayes bar, there's been a few more pompano, but not like targetable. You're just incidental catches while you're fishing for the bonnet heads and some of the small sharks that are cruising around. Pompano.
Oh, pompano over there.
Yeah.
Sorry, you mumbled, buddy.
Sorry.
I don't know what else to tell you, but on the bar.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why. Are you just feeling laid back? But I have your mic all the way up, and I can barely hear you.
Maybe it's yours, because it sounds loud in my headphones.
Maybe it's... No. Maybe it's something else, but I don't know. Okay. I will find your headphones and turn them down.
Well, it just sounds kind of loud in here, so I don't know.
Okay. I have no idea what I did with my headphone switches. I've got everything over here, but yeah, that's it. There we go. All right, I got it. Okay, let's see where you're at. Is that you right there?
Yep.
Okay, how's that? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, are you really loud now?
Nope.
Okay, that's the problem. All right, headphones fixed.
Okay.
You see, boys and girls, when we do this, we have headphones, we're speaking into microphones, and the only way you can tell if you can hear somebody is the volume of your microphone.
Right.
Your microphone was, your headphones were way up.
Okay. Makes more sense.
Oh, yeah, now I can hear you much better. Anyway, I just, you know, I'm deaf anyway. You're blind, I'm deaf. You know, we make Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
You know, exactly.
I feel like we're doing a movie together. I can't hear, you can't see. So, anyway, back there, Pompano on the Cape Hayes Bar.
Yep.
What else is going on there?
Some bonnet heads, a few trout. There's been some Spanish mackerel there, but they've been small, you know, from barely legal to just barely over legal. I haven't heard of a Spanish mackerel over 14 inches in a couple weeks, to be honest with you. But they are there at least. And then right in that cut going between Muddy Bay and Turtle Bay,
right,
been quite a few snook moving through there. They don't stick around very long, but they've been cruising that shoreline as they're transitioning out towards the beaches. And that's about it there. Haven't heard of any giant stuff.
Right. I used to do real well there this time of year. I'd fish along those shorelines and Cape Hayes looking for snook. And it was always annoying because I'd find some isolated bush or tree and just be catching a whole bunch of snook underneath there, 18 to 26 inches. And then Ralph Jones would pull up outside the bar out there and start catching 40, 50-inch snook, you know, well, 40-some-odd-inch snook.
Yeah.
His little ones were in the mid-30s, and I'd be out there, you know, catching basically bait for his fish.
Yeah.
You know? And I tried going out to do what he did, but for some reason or another, Ralph always had this... I've never seen anybody know exactly where to go to find multiples of big snook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ralph Jones is still chartering out there, by the way. Isn't Ron his son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ronnie's doing it, too.
But Ron's a very good fisherman, but his dad has a almost magnetic sense.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He must, because he stays in the water. I mean, he pushes those boats around and pulls the boat around literally in the water the whole time.
Yeah, the guy, I don't know if the fish expel gas, and as the bubbles hit the surface, he can smell where they are, or if he just has an unusual bone in his head that has a magnetic draw to snook. But Ralph's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, I used to have to fish against him, you know. Yeah. Well, not against him, but in the same areas.
And, right.
Yeah, he'd kick my butt almost every time. I used to see Ralph pulling up and go, okay, all right, guys, we've got a bunch of stick here. Let's go find some redfish before I looked bad. You know, I just...
Hey, look at the egret.
We're
going this way. That's funny.
Did I just admit that? Yes, I did.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's all good.
Yeah. So, anyway, where were we? Cape Hayes Bar. Yep. I guess we're going to Turtle Bay and Bull Bay.
Yep. Turtle Bay and Bull Bay have been real sporadic, and I don't know if it's because more guys are trying to target the little sharks and the tarpon out there, but I haven't gotten a great deal of accurate fishing reports up inside Turtle Bay other than a handful of trout and a handful of redfish, and the redfish have been both under the bushes and in some of those deeper sand holes out there on those grass flats. I know there's always little sharks and some tarpon in those back deep troughs going from that first fish shack or whatever heading over towards the eagle's nest. You know, that can usually be pretty productive for a variety of stuff, from big snook to tarpon to sharks to redfish. You never know what you're going to get in that deeper trough. But I just haven't had killer feedback.
Brian Ball, Ronnie Jones, and a few of them were just whaling fish there, just doing some of the best fishing that, you know, imaginable through there. And they've all left.
Yeah.
They said it's just too sporadic.
There are
fish there, and you can catch fish, but when you're doing a charter, you really can't, like, go around an island looking for the fish. If it was me and you, and we were just going along casting until we could find the fish, you can catch a lot of fish there, but if you have to stop and spot fish, it's really tough to figure out where they are.
Right.
Because you'd have to fish here for 15 minutes, move 20 feet, fish for 15 minutes, move 20 feet. It's a major thing, because most people from up north cast overhand.
Right.
And they don't really understand how to skip a bait up into there, so it makes them, they're always caught up in the branches or fishing too far from them so that they don't get caught up in the branches.
Right.
And it's the difference between running a charter and just going fishing is having to accommodate the skill or the casting ability of your clients and finding where fish are for them to be able to successfully, because a lot of people, and understandably so, want to cast their own rod and cast right. to their own fish. And if you come to Florida, a good rule of thumb is if you're up against the mangroves, let the captain throw it and hand you the rod.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any less good, but watch the way they cast to see how it's done, and then do a couple shots yourself and try and get into it little by little, but assuming because you can cast in an open lake that you can cast along the mangroves is not the same thing at all. It's, I mean, my worst nightmare was when I take people out on fly fishing trips, which I used to take quite a few out, trying to teach them how to sidearm cast a fly rod in a short amount of time was always difficult.
Fair.
But you cannot overhand cast a fly rod at the mangroves. Don't work.
Nope.
You know, so anyway, just a little tip. So if you're up there and you're thinking about coming to Florida to get a charter and go out underneath the mangroves or fish along the mangroves, damn it, fishing, where either damn it's a good cast or damn it, I'm in the trees. Once you're going to get in that kind of fishing, watch the captain cast a little bit and then practice those techniques.
Yeah, well, that's good advice. Very good advice.
Long-winded, but good. I mean, I could have said it in like a sentence and a half and not just rambled on about it. So anyway, we're back in Bull Bay and Turtle Bay trying to keep this thing going.
Over in Bull Bay, kind of the same scenario as Turtle Bay, fishing around some of the little islands, the deeper cuts and all the sand holes you can find. Definitely by far the most activity over in Bull Bay is the front entrance and the back entrance over by Whidden Bay. A lot of snook cruising in and out of there. Been some mangrove snapper. Lots of bait around there too. You know, there's been pretty good amounts of bait right there at the front entrance of Bull Bay and going around right there by Keopalau. Also right there from, say, the front entrance of Bull Bay going up to Sandfly.
Right, across the tailing flats.
Yeah. A variety of fish through there. I mean, the bait's been pretty consistent. It's moving in and out through that whole area, but it's been there. So it's bringing in a lot of smaller sharks, a few bigger sharks, some redfish, trout. Obviously, the snook are moving in and out of there. So it's kind of a mixed gamut of stuff kind of moving all around there, which is nice. You just got to move around a little bit, you know, like he was saying, you know, like you were saying earlier, Frank, just got to move around and see what you can find. Just don't spend a great deal of time in that one little spot. Kind of use a trolling motor, even use the wind to your benefit and drift. Same way with up in Whidden Bay. Anywhere from the north side there of Bull Bay all the way through Whidden Bay heading up towards Catfish Creek, there's been some redfish along the edges of the bushes and a lot of snook and some trout, but most of the guys that are catching them are actually just drifting and kind of blind casting to the little sand holes and some of the prop scar troughs and stuff like that and picking up a few here and there.
Yeah, I was telling Captain Larry Smith, he's working on getting his master's and he's getting degrees in marine biology and all these other things, and I was telling him, nobody's ever done a study on the benefits of outboard motors on the grass flats.
Right.
Because there's a lot of benefits to them. People always say, oh, this is bad, this is bad. And that's ridiculous. There's a lot of things, thatching and cleaning the grass and doing all this, and prop scars actually in some areas add habitat and hunting grounds for other fish.
Right.
And so there's good and bad in almost everything. And a lot of it has to me, in my weird head, is that where this is being done is key.
Right.
If it's on a very open area, we have a lot of water going across it, the props and prop scars can be a bad thing. Too many of them, anyway. But if it's in a dark water area, in backwater, the propellers and keeping a lot of the grass clean and, you know, oxygenating water and doing all kinds of other stuff, there's a lot of benefits to having high-powered outboard motors running. Maybe not at speed. Right. And one thing that happens at high speeds is they create a lot of silt. The silt goes over the grasses. Grass covered with dirt and silt cannot get sunlight.
Right.
So
that makes perfect sense, too.
But outboard motors run slow may be very beneficial to a lot of areas.
Well, it's just like that one commercial fisherman saying that, you know, their purse seines that they used to use, dragging them across, used to pull up all that rolling moss and ball it all up and help keep it where it wasn't so spread out in little clumps everywhere. You know, pros and cons to all of it, and some of it makes sense.
Yeah, there's always something good about it. Usually, something good about an activity, but you have to balance it between does the bad outweigh the good or the good outweigh the bad. But there again, it has to go by each individual spot. I think the problem with most people is they think two 1980s. This is what we thought of in the 80s, and I have heard almost no new ideas since 1988. I mean, this is what should be done, and it worked.
You have, but it's all come out of your mouth.
Well, but I hear, okay, this is great because it works right here, but they're not analyzing the area. It's like saying it works in the Keys, so it would work in Charlotte Harbor.
Right.
That's not the case. Charlotte Harbor is a completely different environmental ecosystem. The water flow's different. Everything's different. We have two major rivers dumping in.
Yeah, I mean, the east side is a totally different ecosystem than the west side.
And
I mean, completely opposite ends of the spectrum.
And then both of them are completely different than the Keys. And, you know, that's why I get so tired of eco people. When the first five sentences out of their mouth, I heard an eco 88, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, give me a break. Go, you know, go read a book or something.
Absolutely.
Anyway, back to it. I think we're up to Placida.
Placida's been doing pretty well. Getting a lot of good reports, especially in the evenings after those storms roll through. Gets that real nice calm air out there. Big mangrove snapper, some bonnethead sharks, other little sharks. Snook activity's been phenomenal. Been a few bigger redfish being caught there, especially once that sun goes down. during the flat out middle of the day, it's been mainly mangrove snapper, a few trout, and a few sharks. You know, it's not gangbusters, but at least it's a steady bent rod.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's at that weird funky point. I don't know if it's because of the weather or all these weird monsoon-like storms that we've been having coming through, because that one...
Oh, man. The other night, I literally, we're sitting on the back porch, got blown off. I mean, we had leaves and debris against our screen.
That's pretty significant when it's stuck to the screen.
Well, for those of you who don't understand, my screen porch sits 21, 22 feet off of the ground.
Yeah.
And the back porch where that's at, we're literally 20-some feet up in the air. And we had debris from bushes and shrubs. Not trees, bushes and shrubs. I mean, I could tell the leaves, you
right.
know, okay, that's from that plant, that's from that one, that's from that one. And I could understand
that's
it
crazy.
From trees, but it blew so hard and so strong with such an updraft. It was taking the stuff from the ground and throwing it up in the air. And, you know, as usual, doing right before a storm, you get a lot of upflow.
Right.
And then we went to a whiteout where I could not see.
I heard you had a lot of hail at your house.
Oh, yeah. The hail was amazing. It was all dime-size hail. And
that's crazy.
Oh, yeah, it was just covering the front deck and back deck. I mean, if it wasn't for the massive amount of rain, it would look like snow.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was, but the rain was blinding. Couldn't see the houses across the street.
Really?
No, it was that
wow.
thick. You couldn't see the houses across the street.
I mean, it came down pretty hard at our house, but it was sideways. You know, but it wasn't as gusty as that one we had a few weeks ago, but it
almost
was pretty
reminded
bad.
Me when we had a real rainy season.
Yeah.
When we had the real rainy season, it was so cool.
Speaking of 88.
Yeah, speaking of 1988, we have not. If anybody thinks we have a rainy season, we do not have a rainy season anymore. Absolute fact, there is no rainy season. There is a rainier time, but not a rainy season. And it's every afternoon it used to thunderstorm. And I remember people would buy their homes here in January, February, March, and then move out, sell their home. By July, they'd had enough. They were they would pack up and leave. They could not handle the intensity of every afternoon, continuous lightning, thunder, 40, 60 mile an hour winds, 2 inches of rain every day.
That's why it always cracked me up when people are like, oh, we got a Category 1 hurricane coming our way. Really? That's every day at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. It just doesn't happen anymore. I can tell you, I bet you 15% of the people, if we had a rainy season right now, in this day and age, if all of a sudden by some miracle the rainy season started
itself.
Well, actually just the concrete and rooftops and natural ground with no moisture and there's no localized rain patterns as much. But if it did, you'd be shocked at how many people would leave Florida immediately.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I'm
they
sure.
would not make it through the first summer.
No, I'm sure.
I mean, it was... I was always one of those like to stand in the storm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just get right out of the wind and out of the thing. And I mean, I've been knocked out by lightning, and yes, it explains a lot. but yes, I've had two or three times been major shocks, convulsions, and unconscious from lightning, but still always like standing in the storms.
I love watching them. You know, I just love watching them roll in.
But it freaks out people when they get in the middle of that. I mean, constant bam, bam, bam of thunder.
Yeah.
But I thought there was a tornado coming. It was that intense, and I've been through tornadoes before up north. And you could not get out the back side of the house. So I went out the front side and was looking around the corner to see if I could spot a rain-wrapped tornado. It got that intense with the hail and everything else, usual precursors of, you know, a tornado.
Yeah.
It was just microbursts and downdrafts and updrafts and stuff like that.
That's pretty cool.
Anyway, we were talking about Placida, and the fishing's really good after the storms, and get back on track. What was there?
The bonnet heads, the snook, the redfish, a lot of mangrove snapper, a few Spanish mackerel. Kind of just a mixed gamut of stuff out there.
Okay. Now, moving up the intercoastal, I haven't really heard of much. I know there's a bunch of fish right outside of the boat ramp. As you come out of Placida, when you put in at the boat ramp, you're in a little basin and you go out through a canal. And right as you get out to the right and left, there's been quite a few fish, everything from trout, redfish. Far to the right, up against those docks, we've got a bunch of snook there and all that. I haven't heard anything going up the shoreline, like where the ferry takes people across from Palm Island. I haven't really heard about anything up there.
The only thing I've heard about is some of the night fishing. I've got a couple customers that are staying out there on Little Gasparilla and Palm Island that have been in the past 2 weeks. And they're catching a lot of snook at night underneath all those docks. They're having a field day with them. If nothing's happening on the beach side, they're coming over on the back side and fishing those docks. But that's the only thing I've heard of right there. And same way with going up, heading towards Lemon Bay. All those docks usually got a lot of good snook activity under them with some bycatch of redfish or gag grouper or something like that, and just haven't heard any good feedback. You know, I'm sure it's happening, but just nothing that I can say for certain. But as you get up there closer towards Stump Pass, that's where I'm hearing some more positive reports. Supposedly the pier is done out there, but I'm waiting for Austin to tell me yes, it's 100% open, because they got the tape across it as of last week, but the pier itself is finished. I think they're just waiting to get approval to say that it's safe to walk on or something, but all the decking is on it and whatever else. They just still had the security tape across the front of it.
Right. What's going on with Stump Pass?
Stump Pass.
You said it was really good, and I don't think you ever told me what was there.
I just got sidetracked there going into that, because it was one of those thoughts.
Stop it, Frank.
I had to spit the thought out for a minute.
Standpoint, Frank. So anyway, I'm not sure if the Tom Adams Pier is actually open yet.
Correct.
Okay.
At Stump Pass, big whiting, been a few flounder, some jacks, blue runners. A lot of tarpon cruising up and down the shoreline there. A few incidental sharks of miscellaneous sizes, most of them on the smaller size, but fun size. You know, definitely on light tackle, they're a blast. Been some big rays over there, too. I've had a couple guys hook into, like, what they call garbage can lid size and bigger, you know, and having a field day with them. it's a little different, but if you've never caught one, it hurts. It puts up a good fight. Chuck was telling me about his buddy, Bill, you know, was new to fishing and got into a couple big ones and how exhausting it was. But if you've never caught one, that's a fun fight.
All right. You know, just to be clear, which fish are we talking about?
Stingray.
Stingrays.
A big stingray.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, garbage can lid size.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Once again, I guess I'm going...
Well, you're typing in. Well, you're typing and listening at the same time, so...
So, but stingrays have always been... It's... Years ago, before the drug companies changed all their laws, I used to take out a lot of doctors. Drug companies would hire me to take out groups of doctors, and because of the way my boat was set up, I was very, very popular with all the drug companies. I used to do a great business with them, and I'd have four doctors on the boat, plus the rep and me, and, you know, and we'd be having a good time. One of their favorite things to do was I would take 6-aught reels with the 30-80 billfishers or the 130 billfisher rods.
Yeah.
And I would go down and hook these 4-foot plus stingrays. And there'd be one guy on the rod and the other guy underneath the rod lifting with his shoulder. Two of them on the rods trying to pull them. I mean, I just load them up with 130-pound tests so they could just, you know, crank the winch. But it was always funny to watch one doctor on the rod pull it up on the rod and the other one got his shoulder underneath it and he's pushing up while the other guy's pulling it. Two of them trying to get these big stingrays up to the boat. It was always fun trying to get them off of the hook because, you know... they love catching, but they wanted to see them swim away.
Right, absolutely.
And so there I am trying to avoid these, because a stingray that big has a 4 to 6 inch
easily
barb on his tail. And he's a little upset because, you know, he's had fun playing and we brought him up, but now I got to get the hook out. So I've got him by the head ripping hooks out and trying to avoid this big stinger. Always did, but...
Right.
I was young then, too.
Faster.
Yeah, I was quick.
Have to be for that. They're fun to catch, but are dangerous, you know, so...
You have to be careful. And nobody mutilates an animal, and I did learn after a few trips to bend the barbs and the hooks. I did it after I learned it on sharks. Never, ever do I use barbs on sharks or stingrays. I always bend the barbs down, trying to leave as much of the bump of the barb as possible without any of the holding power of the bump.
Right.
And I don't lose fish, and that made it a lot easier on me after time once I learned that little trick.
Absolutely.
Because I could just grab that stingray, I'd put a glove in my left hand and grab him right by the mouth and just pop the hook out and toss him back, and it was a very quick ordeal rather than trying to work at getting the hook out.
Well, especially with those big old heavy rubber gums.
Yeah.
It's just difficult.
And the first time you grab a 4 or 5 foot stingray by the mouth...
You learn real quick not to.
That will make you pucker up. You learn to get... that first time lasts about a half a second, and you go, this is dangerous, and then you get a big leather welding glove type thing.
Well, people don't realize, they talk about the crushers in a redfish or a tarpon. Well, stingrays, one of their primary diets are... snails and clams and scallops and stuff. So they just swim along the bottom and literally pull it up into their mouth and crush it. You find fossilized crusher plates all the time of stingrays, pieces of it or a whole plate. It's pretty serious.
It's very serious.
It scares the crap out of you, but it hurts too.
So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. But, you know, over time, as I got smarter and... You know, it's like I say in here, it only took me 30 years to figure that out, but I did figure it out.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
I may be slow, but I actually get there.
That's good stuff.
So, anyway, before we head out into the Gulf, that would be a normal thing. Let's talk about the different passes. Ponderosa, Redfish, Captiva, Boca, Little Gasparilla, Stump Pass. What's going on with the passes? Do they have anything in common right now?
The snook. Snook definitely is pretty active. You know, they're leaving all of the harbor and the ICW at a pretty good rate because it is a full moon, so they do spawn this time of year, and a lot of those fish actually go off and stay sometimes at those near shore reefs throughout the summertime, and will kind of move back and forth to the beaches and the passes for more food items. But it's amazing how many snook are moving out there right now. And then of course right now with the tarpon, you know, it's a full moon, I think, think it's tonight, actually. It's the Hilltide. This is their really prime middle of their spawn. They do one in May. The biggest one is in June. Then they sometimes do a smaller one in July. And it's always on the full moons, and they'll do even a smaller one on the new moons. But this full moon is the kickoff of
this is
the killer.
The big spawn going.
Yeah.
On. Now, you're talking about Hilltide. Hilltide, in my opinion, gets its name because when you look at it on a graph, it looks like a giant hill as the tide goes way up and then drops severely.
Yes.
Now, what's happening on this is we get a full moon or new moon, you know, some type, usually the full moon, where you have the moon pulling a lot of water close to shore, and then all of a sudden it just dumps out.
Yep.
And it's the outgoing tide that flushes out all the food and gets everything all stirred up and really kind of creates the time. And once they get in a big feed, then, you know, it's kind of like a burger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Toss a burger down their throat and we're going out.
Right, exactly.
You know? And what you've got is, this is more like fine dining for them.
Yeah.
I would say taking them to a fancy restaurant and then the girls take the guys offshore.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the part is like, you know, it's a major tide that pulls a lot of food source out through the passes, but also those crabs are going offshore to spawn too at the same time. You know, those crabs are used to current, so they don't just all of a sudden get sucked out of the pass for no apparent reason. They're actually going offshore to spawn and lay their eggs, too. So, coincidentally, you've got a couple varieties of crabs, in particular the iridescent swimming crab and the blue crabs, get flushed through those passes along with shrimp and bait fish and all that stuff, too.
And when we talk flush, what these crabs are trying to do is get there to get in position, and rather than having to swim out, they can ride the tide out.
Right.
It's like a surfer. You know, the surfer
riding
waits
the
until he gets the right wave, and then the wave carries them out. It's much easier, much more fun. And I'm not sure that the crabs are doing it for the fun, but I think, you know, over time, would you rather swim out 5 miles or just kind of hang out, let the tide take you?
Right, exactly. You know, and what they do is they catch that tide. That tide starts going out at, let's say, rough guess, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's going to go hardcore outgoing tide until, let's say, 6 o'clock. You know, and about a half hour to an hour before that tide's about ready to go to turn around, all those bait fish or all those crabs have already been started to flush out offshore, but the tarpon have been slowly working their way out offshore, starting inside a little bit and then working their way out to a couple miles outside of the passes, following that strong current. And as they feel that tide starting to just back off a little bit, it's like a light switch goes off and they all disappear. I mean, 1,000 to 10,000 tarpon are all of a sudden gone, and they go out there to catch that slack tide. So the females will all lay their eggs into a big grouping area, and the males just swim through and milk them. And that fertilizes them while you got stagnant, kind of still water, because eggs can intermingle with the sperm. And then that tide turns around and flushes it all back in, because it's another strong, super strong incoming tide, which pulls those fertilized eggs. And like you said, they need the higher salinity for those eggs to be buoyant and to be able to absorb the sperm so they can actually get fertilized. But once they're fertilized, they get flushed back into the mangrove system, where the juvenile fry actually need to grow up, because they eat bugs. They eat the little minnows and the little critters in those way back mangrove swamps.
But snook do it, redfish do it, shrimp do it, tarpon do it.
All those little crabs that swam offshore, that's their
crabs
same concept
are doing
that's
it.
Flushing all there. And
I mean, the amount of species that grow up here, get bigger, and then, you know, head right towards the near Gulf and do their whole spawning thing, and the eggs that come back into the harbor, and the amount of fish that use this for a nursery is staggering.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the amount of species. You know, and there's probably a ton of other species that are off our radar. Who's to say that seahorses don't do it? You know, who's to say?
A lot of seahorses in Feller Harbor, pipefish. We get virtually so many different types of fish up here. But and then we've got sawfish that are, and who knows what they do, nurse sharks, bull sharks.
Right.
So many different fish rely on these bays for, you know,
their nursery.
Nursery, and by that we mean this is daycare, kindergarten, grade school, high school, and then they leave with the adults, head back out in the Gulf.
Absolutely.
So, let's
kind of cool.
Okay, after the passes, let's go out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Gulf of Mexico, other than the crappy weather today, has actually been really good. There was several guys that were supposed to be heading offshore to go red snapper fishing today, but was canceled out because of the funky weather. Which is a smart decision on their part. Anyone that ran offshore today is kind of, I don't know, it's too questionable. But the American Reds, if you're looking for them, because we got, is it a 9-day or 14-day for us this year?
Yeah.
Something like that. It's longer than last year, that's for sure. basically, you got to run a bare minimum of 40 miles out of Charlotte Harbor, you know, out of Boca Grande or Little Gasparilla. If you work your way up towards Venice a little bit, some of those places have got spots in as close as 30 miles, but plan on 40 to 45 being your beginning numbers for American red snapper.
Yeah, and if you're fishing shallow harbor, why catch them in the harbor? No, those are mangrove snappers. They have a bright red belly, black stripe across their eye, and kind of gray and black or gray and brown across the top. But that bright red belly gives you the illusion of a red snapper, but that is a mangrove or gray snapper.
Yeah, it's more of a maroon rather than red. An American red is actually red.
It's red, yeah.
It's a red-orange color. There's no denying
it. So what's up with the vermilion?
Vermilion have been going nuts. 18 to 30 miles out. Some guys are even getting them in as close as 12 that I've heard of, but it seems like that 18 number is more consistent on them. Same way with the lane snapper, which has been really good too. And then your mangrove snapper, same thing, but the mangs and the lanes are just a little bit closer. Mangs are 3 miles to as far out as you want to go, and then the lanes seem to be at about that 10-mile mark and as far out as you want to go. Red grouper, 25 to 35 still.
Are the permit out there?
The permit are out there, and Eric Davis, who's scary, scary permit fisherman. He's out of Fort Myers, but he lives up here now, so I get to talk to him semi-regularly. I was talking to Eric Davis.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was in here yesterday, and the permit are good out there, but he said the biggest thing that he's noticed this year is that they're so much smaller than normal seasons past. He said they're averaging like 10 to 15 pounds. Rather than 20 to 30 pounds, you know, where he's at down there in Fort Myers, his places are like 25 to 35 pounders. He's having a real difficult time getting fish over 20. You know, and I've heard that from quite a few people this year, that the majority of them are all in that 10, 15 pound range. The one thing about permit out there is people kind of get spoiled with that first little group that shows up. They'll stay on a reef for like a week to 2 weeks out there in early April, and then they start moving around. Well, everything happened so early this year that there was permit out there in March. So we're at that weird time of year where today they're going to be on Helen's Reef, tomorrow they're going to be on the Power Pole Reef, the next day they're going to be out at Sherman's Reef. They're just moving around a lot. So if you're actually going to try to target them, you just kind of either need to be prepared to hopscotch from reef to reef, or just go out to a reef, pick a spot, have fun fishing for all the other species, and be prepared with either a small crab or a shrimp, you know, if they happen to pop up and show up to you. Good reports on some amberjack out there at like 25 to 35 miles. Some studs out there. The Captivo Blue Hole has been holding some 50 to 80 pound amberjack. Same way with the Mohawk, which those are all about 30 miles out. I'm sure the Pegasus, because it's real close to those same areas, that might have probably the same kinds of fish on it. But there's been some top quality AJs out there. If you really want to get hurt and have some sore arms the next day, they're fun.
Isn't that amazing? Okay, got this great fish. Do you really want to hurt yourself? Go out there.
Yeah.
And you can abuse yourself, black and blue marks, pulled muscles, all that stuff, and have a great time.
Absolutely. It's a blast. I've never caught a big one, though. I mean, I think my biggest one's probably like 30, 34, nothing giant. But, I mean, one that size hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. The only thing I haven't heard of is much for the pelagic. I didn't really hear any dolphin this week or any tuna, kings or Spanish. Real sporadic out there, so nothing out of the ordinary, but you should be prepared for that because I'm sure they're out there.
So, heading back in, what's going on Ponderosa, Sanibel?
All those docks right there around Ponderosa have definitely swapped out with the snook. The snook had kind of taken over in all those docks right there in that immediate vicinity around Sanibel, Ponderosa, St. James City. Some 40-plus inch snook. I mean, if you're willing to throw a big pinfish or a big ladyfish up underneath there, there's some pretty nice fish under there. Around on the flats around St. James City and the backside of Sanibel, drifting the grass flats, been some better trout, a little bit more consistent numbers. The redfish are hugged up against the mangroves in those deeper pockets underneath the bushes. As you get up towards Redfish Pass, those snook are all stacked right there in Redfish Pass where you can do that nice cool drift and have a good time catching them for fun.
Yeah.
You know, just got to be careful of flipper being annoying and wanting to take every one of them you put back. Lots of little sharks. There's been some bigger bulls and lemons cruising up and down there throughout the intercoastal, but it's not anything consistent, unfortunately. As you get up closer towards Captiva Pass, there are some tarpon throughout the intercoastal there from basically Sanibel all the way up through to Boca. The spawns got them kind of messed up a little bit, so they're not real heavy on the intercoastal, but if you post up and anchor up, just throw out some baits and kind of wait, you will get a couple, but it's not as good as it was last week. You know, that will change by the end of this week. You know, coming up on the weekend, you'll have a lot more fish staying in more consistent numbers in the intercoastal.
The one thing about it to remember is get away from the other boats.
Yes.
And this is not something that's better. If you see somebody fishing, try and go as far away from him, try and get a quarter mile, half mile away from him, because it's not going to enhance your fishing, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
If you see somebody there, try and go, you know, either up or down, it doesn't really matter. But the more isolated you are, the more chance you have of catching the fish.
Absolutely. You know, and they're catching them on a variety of stuff, from the crabs to mullet to ladyfish. Kind of, you know, be prepared to have it all kind of out there. And be prepared for the bycatch of the little sharks. It wouldn't surprise me also with this hill tide bringing all these tarpon back in and out, that we might start to see some bigger sharks moving in, because they've kind of played a disappearing act in the last several weeks. But some big sharks should start to follow them back in, so be kind of ready for that if you're really into that. Up there around Captiva, up to like Yuseppa, mixed reports of some mangrove snapper underneath the docks and along the bushes, some redfish, a few snook. But Jug Creek area is probably by far the most consistent for a variety of things going on, from not only just the bait, pinfish, a lot of ballyhoo down there too. I've been hearing about, been kind of a weird year for ballyhoo. Get mixed reports of guys saying, oh, I went to throw on what I thought was white bait and it was a giant school of ballyhoo, you know, which is kind of cool, a little different. Lots of little sharks around Jug Creek, a few oddball Spanish, trout, a few snook. Just kind of the whole mixed gamut, just like there is up, you know, like around Devilfish. I mean, Jug Creek is a little bit more of a mirror image, except for Jug Creek is cool because you get a few of your other oddball fish. None of the sun gazers, but you'll get some of the juvenile permit mixed in with some of the pompano. You'll get those little green wrasses, which are something a little different when you're throwing your cast net down there, because it's just such a higher salinity and such healthy grass flats all around there. You get some oddball incidental little reef fish that are kind of cool. you know, just if you're into looking at that weird stuff as you're bringing up your cast net or incidentally on a hook.
Okay, and I guess while we're down here, what's going on with the Cape Hayes Reef?
Cape Hayes Reef has got a lot of mangrove snapper on it, a few cobia. There's been a few bigger jewfish on there because they're kind of moving out of the harbor a little bit, getting ready to go offshore with the higher salinity and warmer weather. They tend to move around a little bit more. So hearing some mixed reports of, you know, a 300-pounder and then the next day there's nothing there. That's about it. Nothing real major at the reef itself.
Okay. I guess the deep holes in the harbor.
Deep holes in the harbor. Lots of sharks, but we're going to go on that same thing like you were talking about last week with drifting. You know, drifting is definitely your friend right now for finding your sharks. Throw your chum bag over, drift for a little bit. If you happen to hook a shark, throw your anchor. Well, start fishing some more.
The other thing I would do is if you hook a fish, I'd, you know, want to get back to that area. But my first sign to put the anchor down, I remember, keep your anchor on a loop. Don't tie it to the boat. And make sure you got buoys on it so you can just throw it overboard, because you always have that chance of that really nice shark that's just going to spool you in a matter
of... Or a tarpon.
And you just want to be able to throw the anchor overboard and come back and pick the rope up when you're done fighting the fish. But if I'm drifting along with my chum bag out, as soon as I start seeing bait congregating, fish, skipjacks, anything I see working in the chum slick, I'm going to get my anchor down and stop right there, because as soon as you've accumulated the bait fish, the next thing that will come is smaller fish to eat, or bigger fish to eat them, and then bigger fish to eat them, and bigger fish to eat them. Right. You started your food chain right there. Don't drift away from it. You know, you've got to... that's what the chum is for, is to start attracting fish. And as you're doing that drift, if you got a bunch of fish around you, you can literally drift away from them. And right. They're not going to keep following that chum bag. They find it. They're working in it. You need to stop at that point and wait for the bigger fish to happen.
Yeah.
What's a tarpon like in the deep hole?
Scattered. About the only place I'm hearing of actual consistent tarpon wise is right there in that bucket behind Cape Hayes. You know, it's a little deeper water. It's not really a significant hole or anything. It just kind of like a little bowl, basically. There's been some catchable tarpon there. The rest of the tarpon are just scattered in the 20-foot holes and around them. But they're just being weird. You'll see them, but it's just complete luck stumbling across the group that wants to feed. What else going on? There's still a lot of little schools of jacks everywhere, you know, like you were saying, waiting for that bait to come to you. But like, if I'm looking for the little sharks, I'm gonna do like you said, but I also like to look for bait or bird activity
before I even start doing the chum or anything else. I'm using my eyes first. I'll scan the whole horizon, the surface of the water. I'm going to try and find a likely place to start.
Yeah. Just going out there and just kind of starting off blind is a little bit of a pain in the butt, but I always try to look for those birds, bait fish, something that's definitely looks more fishy. And you will see that probably the majority of your better activity is in that southern, you know, in the middle 20-foot hole, in the Pirate Harbor hole. That seems to be where those thread fins are hanging out, or the small schools of glass minnows seem to be a little bit more concentrated, but they're moving around a lot, so just do your best.
All right. I guess we got to go to the east side from here, right?
Yep. Two Pines.
Okay.
Up to Burnt Store. That whole area through there is scattered with some redfish and snook. But the main thing that most of the guys have been kind of targeting through there have actually been staying on the outside edge of the bar, catching a few oddball redfish and a few oddball pompano that are fishing the flats part of it. But the tarpon and the miscellaneous sharks have been staying out there in that nice little trough that kind of runs from, I guess, Matt Lachey and works its way around up towards Burnt Store. So they're kind of working that whole area, and there's been a lot of thread fins down in there, so there's been a good mixed activity, you know, but it varies from day to day. You know, we got a nice black tip down there the other day, and that was our only fish that we got. But hearing of some other good reports of the tarpon and some bigger black tips and small black nose and bonnet heads and stuff. Once you hit Burnt Store, though, Burnt Store up to Pirate Harbor, that seems to be the most, well, actually just north of Pirate Harbor.
Okay.
All the way down to Burnt Store. Redfish scattered up along the bushes and the sand holes. And shrimp is still working, but even really good over there. They are hitting some white bait too, but shrimp is working good. The snook are scattered all over, right around Hobbs Point and all the way around that whole front flat going down towards Burnt Store. It's got a lot of snook mixed in there. Mangrove snapper on the back side of Hobbs Point underneath some of those bushes. There's not very many of them, but they seem to be a little bit better, like that 12, 14 inch range.
Okay. I'm keeping up. Go ahead.
No. Haven't heard much of inside Pirate Harbor. I'm sure there's a few juvenile tarpon moving around and some mangrove snapper, but it's getting warm. So those places like that get to be feast or famine, kind of like the 41 bridge. You know, you'll have 2 or 3 days of really good, then you'll have 2 days of crap. You know, it's inconsistent. The working your way up from Pirate Harbor, heading up towards Alligator Creek, your better numbers of redfish are right in those back creeks a little bit, even way up inside those creeks and some of those little basins. The redfish are primarily under the bushes, especially at points where there's a little bit of more water flow. But the shrimp, your pinfish, cut ladyfish, those are all kind of starting to work a little bit more. Your snook are still on the outside edges. Some trout out on the deeper parts of the sandbar. A few cobia and bonnethead sharks. There's even been a few incidental just tarpon that are just kind of laid up there along the edge of the bar. Haven't heard of anybody hooking any, but they're seeing them. There's also been a lot of those little jacks that have been out in the 20-foot holes on top of the bar, in and out.
Sorry about that. Watch. Kind of updating some of the fishing reports as we go along, do this, trying to kill a couple of different things. I guess PGI and the PGI canals. I'm hearing mixed reports from Ponce. Still quite a few activity fish there at Ponce, but yeah. Have you had any more insights on that?
Not really. I mean, there's been some real small spade fish coming in and out of there, which is something a little different lately. The mangrove snapper bite's been going on, but it's been a lot of small fish. A few bigger black drum jacks have been coming through on a fairly regular basis throughout the course of the day. I've heard of a few snook, but not very many over there. It seems like the night bite's been better for them, for the boat guys that are fishing there. Up inside PGI, though, tarpon, little juvenile tarpon, and the snook sitting on the lights that are too lazy to leave. That's about the only real serious activity I've heard about, honestly, up inside there. I'm sure the mangs and the jacks are doing good, but so many guys just aren't really messing with it. They're in such a hurry to want to get out of the canal to go chase other fish. They just aren't messing with it as much because the weather's been so beautiful. You just seem to get more reports on the windy, crappy days, you know. They go up inside there to hide. I think the weather's just been too pretty to get the good, consistent stuff out of those canals.
So, anything else around that we can think of or talk about or do or whatever?
Honestly.
Oh, Alligator Creek Reef. We didn't touch that.
Yeah, Alligator Creek Reef. That's been a weird one. The north end seems to be really good on the outgoing tide, and then the south end seems to be a little bit better on the incoming tide for the mangrove snapper, for cobia, some miscellaneous Spanish mackerel. even some little sharks, but it's, you got, I'm finding that the guys that are doing the best are actually kind of drifting around out there and then anchoring for just a short period of time, pulling anchor, drifting for a little bit, pulling anchor. You know, they're not staying in one spot. Those seem to be the guys that are catching the more numbers of fish, I guess I should say. Not necessarily quality, but better numbers.
Okay. All right, I had interrupted you. What were you going to say when I said anything else we need to talk about?
Probably maybe a whitebait report, okay. If we want to talk about that at all.
Yeah, we can do that. I actually added that to the fishing report, so might as well get... I'll try and type while you talk on that one.
Well, whitebait's been at a little bit of marker one and marker two, but nothing steady. This year's been odd for them. Your better whitebait has been down there literally from the main entrance into Bull Bay on the harbor side all the way around to the backside of Devilfish. And those are a little bit bigger whitebait. Same way at Jug Creek. Jug Creek Shoals has got a lot of nice whitebait on it. And it's just starting to get a little bit better around the Boca Grande north side. That secondary channel, I guess, going out through Little Gasparilla. What is that, the backside of Dog Island or whatever?
Yeah.
There's been quite a bit over there, and that's starting to get more consistent.
Okay.
And then the thread fins are mainly on the southern end of the harbor from the Pirate Harbor hole down towards Boquilla and then heading out towards the pass. There's some scattered thread fins from the 41 bridge all the way out through the 20-foot holes, but you start to see much, much better, healthier, bigger schools of them down there on that lower east side.
All right. Now, let's see. I got that.
And this is the time of year for the pinfish with all their babies out there right now, so there's a ton of pinfish out there that are dime size to quarter size right now.
Where is that?
Everywhere on the grass. That's why you're catching white bait. You know, it's real hard to find the bigger pinfish right now. The only guys that are getting the bigger pinfish are actually sabiki in them in that 8, 10, 12 feet of water.
All right. Okay, where's the 8-10 feet of water that you're talking about?
Out in the center of the harbor, basically, marker 5, marker 4, working your way out of the passes and on along the beaches. The guys are just having a hard time finding a castable size pinfish right now.
Now, I used to go out when I was looking for pinfish out there, and I would literally try and find a little bit of stained water. When you're looking at the water, what you want to look for is a very light brown kind of haze to a spot. And one thing about pinfish, when they start moving in and actually a bunch of them in one spot, they feed like piranha.
Right.
I mean, they are some of the most vicious feeding fish I've ever seen. And they get working in area, and they will literally stir up the bottom right there. And you can see a light brown, like dust cloud. It's hard to distinguish in the water, and you got to throw your net on a few kind of imaginary brown spots before you get understand what color it is that you're looking for. But you can literally a lot of times, especially in the areas out in front of Bull Bay, Jug Creek, when you see it for the first time and actually catch the pinfish, then you'll kind of understand what it is I'm talking about. But it's different. We talk about seeing a lot of fish, but you can literally kind of look and see where that big ball of pinfish might be.
Right.
Because when they're actively feeding, spawning, doing anything, they're very aggressive. I mean, they're crazy aggressive fish.
Right.
But when we had our big aquarium in the store here, I made the mistake one time of I had a pinfish in there, and we had one. So I threw another one in there. One pinfish is no problem. two pinfish is a pack.
Yeah.
And they literally, I had a snook in there because I used to have a special permit for teaching. I used to do a lot with the schools and all that kind of stuff, teaching permit. So I could have any size of any species I wanted at that point. And they literally ran my snook out of the tank. They were attacking him so viciously.
They're evil.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about it in the past. If they got 3 or 4 pounds, you'd probably never get in the water.
No. No, I wouldn't.
I mean, I don't get in the water anyway, but that'd definitely be all the more reason not to.
Yeah, if catfish got 4 or 5 foot, if pinfish got a foot and a half, these would be reasons not to go in the water.
Absolutely.
Yes. Sail cats, I mean, I've never seen anything, you know, go after a bait as aggressively as a sail cat.
A guy was saying he saw one miss his topwater and breached itself about halfway out of the water twice, chasing his topwater in his canal when he's reeled it up to his dock.
I mean, they're crazy. I've been out shark fishing, and okay, I can feel a catfish trying to push around the bait and said, okay, we're going to get out of here. I don't want to deal with this. And be reeling very fast with the bait where it's kind of dragging right along the surface and watching the catfish just grab and try and hold and explode on it. And I was like, you know, I can tell you right now, don't want any part of, if they got bigger, no. They're fine the size they are. They can't get you. But, yeah. You know, they're not going to hurt you. They're going to stay away from you, if anything. But if they were a little bigger, they would be scary.
Yes, yes, they would be.
Yes. So, anyway, anything else that we should talk about today?
No, I'd say, you know, like you were saying earlier, you can have a game plan, but it could change. So don't just be fixated on one spot. Be ready to move around a little bit until you find your fish.
All right. What would be... So, all right, let me get kind of a thing. If I was going out in the middle of the harbor, what would you say to do?
Going out to the middle of the harbor?
Yeah, if I was just want to go and get some activity-style fish, what would you say to do?
I would be looking for some life, like you said, you know, like you were saying earlier with the birds and the bait. And then I would throw my chum bag over until I got everything kind of drawn around me, and then start fishing with some cut bait and even some shrimp. You know, I'm going to throw some shrimp out under a bobber, see if I can get a Spanish mackerel that way. I may even throw a shrimp on the bottom and jig it along and see if I can pick up a silver trout mixed in with any of that other stuff, and see if I can get some shark activity going just to bend the rod, because the little black nose and sharp nose and black tips are kind of everywhere. The black tips, if you really want a black tip right now, like of a little bit better size, they seem to be focused a little bit more on the live bait fish. So I'm going to throw the sardines or cut mullet out for anything that comes along. But if I pick up a nice big pinfish or a sugar trout or even a silver trout, I'm going to put it under a bobber and throw it out there and let it float around a little bit and try to pick up a bigger black tip. And they're just... They're a tarpon with teeth, with how acrobatic they can get at times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're absolutely amazing.
So I think that would probably be about your best activity for inside the harbor.
All right. Well, I can't think of anything else we need to yak about. We've been going on and on and on and droning around here forever. Yeah, I mean, for an hour and 14 minutes. So,
jeez.
Is there any... how do you want to wrap this up?
Well, if you have the opportunity to go out this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon, that tarpon feed out there right now is absolutely just amazing. Take advantage of it, because you don't get to experience it very often. You know, I'd be getting out there at that 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock hour, even though you got to dodge these monsoon storms. You know, they're just feeding so unbelievably right now, and guys are having a blast. I'm hearing a 14 fish days.
Yeah, every afternoon.
Yeah.
Kind of before and after the storms. But watch and don't let a storm get between you and where you docked your boat.
Yeah.
You know, where you left your trailer or where your boat is docked, no storms between you and that spot. That's the first rule, because, okay, it looks like that storm's coming up. I'll just go a little further north. What happens when one comes in from the north as well?
Right.
So always have plan B escape route.
Exactly.
Because these storms can get seriously strong, and it's hard to judge the direction the wind is going to come from.
Well, it's hard to judge where, even with the wind and the storms, I mean... Some of these storms have been strong enough where the wind didn't matter. I mean, that one that came through the other night, that sea breeze was kicking pretty good, and yet it pushed right out to the Gulf and then socked in on Boca Grande for 4 hours.
But that's what I'm saying. You can't tell which way the wind is going to blow. You always, when you get in the middle of fishing and you're having this much fun and you get in some of those tarpon and you're going to get so excited, somebody in the boat, remember to look at the sky.
Yeah.
Keep your eye on the sky, because never let the storm get between you and where you go to be safe. And
exactly.
I mean, I've spent many a thunderstorms hiding out under a bridge somewhere. You know?
Or at one of the restaurants that's not your favorite, sitting there.
I've spent many a time, you know, we've just literally had to push the nose out of the boat up into the mangroves, tie off into mangrove trees, and just hope for the best.
Yeah.
But
did anyone bring bug spray?
Lay all the rods down in the boat. No, don't leave the rods sticking up. They are lightning rods.
Yeah.
Graphite rods conduct electricity very well. So if you have to tie off into the mangroves for a storm to go by, lay the rods down and get low in the boat.
Yep.
And you're 99% you're going to be all right. You're going to be a little uncomfortable, but just kind of put something over your head and kind of relax and wait out the storm. It's better than being open water, because tied to the mangroves, you know, if you sink, you're only sinking, you know, 6 inches till you hit the bottom. So you're all good. You just bail it out when you're done. So,
yep.
All right. Anyway, I guess enough of that. Get a little boombadita going on here. This is Fish and Frank, and that's Robert in the chair across from me, and this is Radio Fishing, and we even talked about fishing today. Oh, be darned. And we'll be back, trying to get everything done, getting over all this auditing stuff and all this other stuff. It takes up a lot of time. So, hopefully things are going to settle down and we're going to get back on a regular schedule of radio fishing and back on the phones with all our captains. So, you guys, appreciate you listening, and we will work this out eventually. But from Fish and Frank and Robert, say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
See, he's so easy. Bye, y'all.